Well, hello, hello. It is good to see you again, and welcome back to Through the Wealth Lens. I am your host and moderator, Ryan Ruff. It is great to be back with you all here on the show today. And as always, I'm going to be joined by the stars of our show, and that's Mr. Hannes Grascher and Max Grascher, International Private Wealth Advisors over at UBS. And in addition to them, we're going to be joined by a special guest in Mr. Mark Tepsick that's going to be with us here today as we dive into a really unique topic. And to kind of frame things up before we bring the guys out and say hi and really get into this topic, I want to, you know, kind of set the scene, if you will. And that is, look, much has been studied and written about the function of a family office, acknowledging that, look, every family and every family office will look and behave very differently based on a multitude of factors on the table. So Hannes and Max have spoken before about the virtual family office, much of the research emphasizing that the myriad of challenges that are faced by family offices that prevent, you know, a family office from functioning properly. So today what we're going to be doing on the episode is we're going to take a closer look at the concept of a family-focused family office, a little different than the traditional family office as well as the virtual family office model that we mentioned. We're diving into the family-focused family office, which is a more comprehensive and inclusive approach that really helps the family office role and function just improve in the long run. So with that, let's go ahead and say hi to the men of the hour. Hannes, Max, good to see you guys. How you doing?
Good to be back on today, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. I'm really excited to have Mark Tepsick on as a guest. Mark is one of the co-authors of the same name white paper and a member of UBS's Family Office Solutions team here at UBS. Mark is our Family Office Design and Governance Specialist. And in his role, Mark serves as an in-house subject matter expert on the family office space and is a thought partner to families with significant wealth. I've worked with Mark closely in advising some of our clients in their family office organizational design, structure, and governance, as well as operational best practices and strategy to manage and sustain their wealth for future generations. Prior to joining UBS, Mark spent a decade at a large Midwestern single family office where he served a dynastic multi-generational family. There, he was the family's general counsel and advised on family office structuring, estate and income tax issues, as well as business formation and real estate development. He also counseled the family on the sale of their publicly traded real estate company to Brookfield Asset Management in 2018. So he's got a lot of experience in the space. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Of course. If we're going to examine a family-focused family office, let's first briefly touch on the traditional family office. And the traditional family office is focused on a few things. Generally speaking, they're technical matters, right? They're focused on accounting, tax, investment, estate planning, as well as sourcing and managing external third parties, such as attorneys, CPA, insurance advisors, and so forth. And so if you think about the family-focused family office, you're really going from just technical back office function to a family-focused family office where you're trying to bring the family together. You're not only just focusing on the technical aspects of wealth management, you're also helping the family facilitate several different things. And primarily what you're trying to do is have the family come together, communicate, collaborate, and you're really trying to sustain their unique culture. And so if you think about a traditional family office, it was formed to do technical things, right? It was also generally formed by a founder, such as matriarch, patriarch, and it was formed for those individuals. So over time, what happens is there's a just natural growth in the family, whereas initially that family office was focused on technical aspects. It was also focused on a narrower set of the family. But as time goes on, the family has more needs because the family just grows larger. You got the next generation growing, having their own families. And so they also start consuming resources. And a lot of these family offices were formed oftentimes within an operating business, which is what I'll call an embedded family office. And so that family or that founder was leveraging the business and certain people there, such as the CFO, for a lot of these technical aspects. It was leveraging the admin there, as well as a host of other people, to do some of these services. But at some point in time, the family's needs grow too complex for a few different reasons. And so at some point, they stand up a family office outside of the business, or they have a liquidity event where they sell the business. And so that's really the first step in the family office is, hey, let's build an infrastructure around the family to handle some technical aspects. And it's usually a smaller subset of the family, but not all the time. But the family-focused family office model is really taking that back office, making it more transparent, as well as bringing the family together, helping them communicate, enhancing their communication, enhancing their knowledge base, right, and their competency around all these technical aspects. And it's not standing in the way. It's frankly supporting and promoting the family. And again, it's sustaining the culture of the family. So you can't really have a culture of a family if the family isn't communicating and if they're frankly not engaging with each other. So it's doing a lot of the technical aspects, but at some point it flips and stand back and say, okay, what else can we be doing? What else should we be doing? How do we make this family office much more value added? And how do we make it more value added for the entire family and not just a subset of the family? And it's a process, okay?
Mark, while the natural tendency is for a family's wealth to be measured quantitatively as financial capital, every family wealth preservation plan begins with an acknowledgement that the most important assets are the family members themselves. Families who understand this concept spend most of their time growing all of their assets, especially their qualitative assets. I've often said on this podcast before that the human element is too often ignored. In your paper, you refer to these five capitals. Can you talk a little bit more about these five qualitative assets?
Yeah, sure, Max. And so, you know, when you think about a family, sure, there's financial wealth, but there's also a lot of other wealth, primarily human capital, right? The family members themselves. So the human capital of the family consists of the individuals who make up the family. Their human capital includes their physical, emotional well-being, as well as each family member's ability to find meaningful work and establish a positive sense of personal identity, such as purpose, right? The other capital is intellectual. So intellectual capital of a family is comprised of the knowledge gained through the life experiences of each family member. And frankly, signs of this type of capital are academic, career, artistic success, as well as family members' understanding of their individual and family finances, such as competency, right? What is going to manage the family finances, frankly, is the human capital. The other capital is social capital. And frankly, this is one of the most meaningful capitals of the family wealth. It refers to the family members' relationships, not only with each other, but also their communities. No family, frankly, in my opinion, exists within a vacuum, right? They all operate within a community or subset of communities, whether it's in an industry that they work in, but also the community in which they live, right? And so indicators of this social capital include the family's ability to make thoughtful, shared decisions together, to welcome new members, and to give its time, talent, and treasure to wider society of which it is a part, right? And so for many families, this includes philanthropy, not only giving their financial capital away, but also sitting on a lot of these boards in the community and adding their intellectual capital to it, right? Because a lot of these families are builders, they're innovators. And so if they could sit on these boards, they are in a sense using their social capital to improve the communities in which they operate in. And another capital, which is often overlooked, is spiritual capital. So what does that mean? Spiritual capital comprises the family's ability to share and sustain an intention that transcends each member's individual interest. Sometimes it's described as a shared dream. Spiritual capital isn't necessarily equivalent to, frankly, their spiritual beliefs or their religious beliefs or, frankly, their traditions. It's indeed, it might take the form of humility, the recognition that this journey is fraught with challenges, right? Because you're really trying to sustain a family you're trying to sustain a family's wealth in all its forms of wealth over multiple generations, and that's not easy. So you need an intentional way to do this. And so it's thinking about those challenges and taking the strength of the family and building it together, right? So if you think about a family-focused family office, you're bringing the family together to frankly meet these challenges and exceed them. And so gratitude towards those with whom we share the journey, those who came before each family member, so the ancestors who often, you know, had challenges of their own, built something from nothing, and then it's up to the next generations to keep on building it or at least sustain it. The other one, obviously, and the easiest to measure, right, is financial capital. It's the financial capital is what is there to help the family cultivate the other forms of capital. It facilitates quality healthcare, education. It facilitates the philanthropy, like we were talking about earlier, as well as providing the time and opportunity to come together and talk about all these challenges. Building and sustaining a shared dream, the opportunity to cultivate these qualitative capitals and not spend precious days laboring slowly to make ends meet. And so it's a great gift, which financial capital, frankly, makes all of that possible.
No, this is great stuff, Mark. And so essentially what I'm hearing here is that this family-focused family office is really a holistic model that not only works on preserving financial wealth, but also growing and nurturing all of these qualitative capitals. But talk to me about the how. How is that all achieved within that family-focused model?
Of course. So if you think about, again, the family office, it's there initially to carry out administrative functions, right? Administrative financial functions, tax functions, legal, what have you. But it also strategically engages the family together. It enhances the communication of the family. It brings them together around the table in part of the delivery model. So you're weaving the family into the service delivery model of the family office. And so if you think about a family office, it's comprised of individuals that work there, right? So if you think about it, how much time are they spending doing the technical aspects, administrative aspects of their job, but also how much time are they spending engaging with the family, not only on an individual basis, but also engaging them collectively and holistically to really saying, okay, what are our goals and objectives? We're not just here solely to grow the financial capital. How can you use the family office as a platform to grow the rest of your capitals? And so you have to sit back and think about your goals and objectives and then come up with a plan to do that. And you can't do it without the family. The family has to be on board. And so it's really engaging with the family members individually as well as collectively.
Mark, when you refer to the family enterprise, what does that encompass?
So the family enterprise, right? These families are complex. And so the enterprise consists of businesses, whether they be multiple operating businesses or a single business. It includes the investment portfolio. It includes the philanthropic initiatives, which is often carried out by a private foundation, whether it's a single private foundation of the entire family or frankly, separate and independent private foundations, as well as the trusts, the partnerships, and really all the complexity that a family has going on, right? And so it's all of that. It's operating businesses, partnerships, the investment portfolio, the trusts, which are clearly interconnected and not independent of the family, right? There's often trustees over family trusts and so forth. And so really that is the family enterprise.
And Mark, it seems that these goals and objectives, along with the family-focused family office's enhanced service delivery model, are interrelated and interdependent. So the practice of clarifying shared values and enhancing family communication allows families to flourish. So we've often talked to our clients about establishing an effective communication framework because, you know, we know without it, it would be really difficult to forge connections among the broader family, implement financial education, and incorporate effective governance. Without effective governance, it would be challenging to align the family enterprise. Can you give us some examples of how important this communication component is and how is it implemented?
So the communication component of the family, if you think about the natural growth and evolution of a family often starts, right, matriarch, patriarch. They have sons and daughters. They grow up in the same household. they go to college, they move away, they meet people, they get married, they have children of their own. They often don't always come back to the same city and same location of that business or of the matriarch patriarch. And so what this does is it spreads out the family, okay, across the country and frankly, even internationally. So you think different time zones, everybody's doing their own thing, and but they've got a shared, they often have shared wealth, right? Whether that's an operating business or portfolio or philanthropic endeavors. And so that's a lot of moving parts. And so the family focus, family office can sit back and say, okay, we're all talking to these people, generally speaking, but how do we bring them together? So you think about Zoom, that's an easy way, but how do you accomplish that? How do you execute on it? One easy way is just coordinating calendars, coming up with an agenda. You don't have to overthink this, but another way is creating a family newsletter. So as the family grows and grows and grows, you've got cousins, okay? You've got in-laws and spouses. And so that's a lot of information. And so I've seen some family offices go out there, create a newsletter, because they actually are the nerve center for a lot of these families on a default level, right? And that's on the family side. The other component of the communication, which is very, very important, especially if you have a shared asset, is there's financial and business information emanating and being produced by the family office. And so how do you disseminate that information to the beneficial owners, to the trustees, to the shareholders? Okay, it's a lot of work. And if you make an analogy to publicly traded companies, they have an investor relations function, which enhances the communication between those executives and the shareholders. And so the family focus, family office, really administrative first, okay, because you need to do that. Second is how do you build a communication? Because without communication, it's really hard to do all the other value-added services that the family focus, family office model purports to advance.
So Hannes, I want to throw this next question back over to you. Could you share a little bit about the benefits that you've seen in this new focus where the family is really at the center of the family enterprise?
So the two main pillars of the family focused family office are cohesion and trust. Transparency built on the foundations of good communication and interaction within enhances cohesion, giving all family members a platform and a voice for expressing their opinions, as well as sharing knowledge, strengthens the family enterprise, as it will add a more diverse range of opinions with respect to engagement and decision-making. And trust also is also enhanced through family financial education, as it helps each family member increase their own awareness, context, and knowledge of the family's wealth, equipping them to be able to participate in meaningful intra-family dialogue regarding their particularly wealth circumstances. Mark, can you talk about some of the other benefits you have seen?
Yeah, so let's talk about how the family-focused family office can build resilience. So if you think about resilience, it's really meeting the challenges and overcoming those challenges, both independently and individually as a family member, but also collectively as a family, right? And so oftentimes families have, you know, they're very dependent on one or two individuals, whether that's the founder or the matriarch and patriarch. And so the goal really should be, hey, we are going to sustain, the family. We're going to use the family focus, family office to bring the family together, to impart the wisdom, to impart the judgment, to impart just the decision-making prowess, but also how do you sustain really the family enterprises moving forward? So the family has to collaborate, right? Part of that is communication. And so if you can't use that family focus, family office as a platform for the generations to communicate and to collaborate and to come to decisions, then you're really leaving a lot of value on the table in ways that you can engage the family and advance the family's mission, and do it in a way that the family becomes more resilient, right? Because they could just make better decisions, exercise better judgment, and do it in a way that they're collaborating with each other, and just making a more transparent family-focused family office to achieve a lot of these goals and objectives.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of moving parts and functions in a family enterprise, and they're all linked together by shared family ownership and family-led initiative. So this fragmentation can create complexity, potentially resulting in miscommunication and mismanagement. The family-focused family office can assist in helping the family to understand that the enterprise is the sum of its parts, linked to form a whole. This concept includes not only common ownership, but also how the seemingly disparate parts of the enterprise often financially support each other, as well as how family initiative links them together. Another benefit is wealth preservation and growth. The purpose of the family-focused family office is to help the family preserve and grow its wealth while sustaining its core values across the existing and future generations.
So, Mark, based on your background, you are an expert in designing family offices, and we've already established how important that design process is, especially when it comes to the members and communicating with each other along the way. How do you implement such a communication network that is effective during the setup of that family office?
Yeah. So each family is different, right? They've got a different family profile. They've got different family enterprise, a different way that they communicate and collaborate with each other, and frankly, just a different culture when you think about it, okay? And so how do you create a communication network to where you're building that resilience, you're sending out information, but also receiving information? And so you have to sit back and think, okay, the enterprise consists of a business. So that business has financial and other information coming off of it, right? Here's how we did this quarter. Here's our plans for the next few years. So how is that information transmitted to the broader family, who are frankly often shareholders and or fiduciaries, as well as sit on the board? And so there's ways you could do that. There's obviously just the old financial statement way, sending them out. But part of it also is having meetings with an agenda to get the family leaders or family business leaders to discuss this, not only in one way communication, but also having an engagement in fielding questions. And that way everybody's on the same page. 90% of this is communication. So that's one way. That's the business. You could do the same thing with the philanthropic endeavors, right? Where, hey, here's our goals, objectives, and initiatives. Here's what we did. Here's what we're going to do. Here's the grants that we made. And here's how we're really advancing our mission as a family in our philanthropic goals and objectives. So there's that more financial, there's that business information. If you're thinking about the portfolio, oftentimes families, if they're smart and forward thinking, will set up an investment committee, okay? And it comprises of various stakeholders of the family, oftentimes an independent family member who's not of the family, who's not of the family office, who they actually seek this person out. And so the investment committee is important just in communicating the performance, in all that information that comes off the portfolio. The other component is really non-financial. And really, this is where the family office can play another key role. Is a family has a lot of life events, right? You're thinking about weddings, you're thinking about birthdays, graduations, other life milestones. And so that's what I was talking about earlier. You could create a newsletter. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. It could be sent via email. I've seen family offices go and create private social media channels for that specific family. And just facilitating, not doing the communication for the family, but facilitating that information for the family so they can engage easier. Because again, you're trying to sustain and build upon that culture. Without all that, it's really hard to do that because the family's spread out.
And Mark, another important point you discuss in your white paper is the value of strengthening connections within the family. Can you explain this to our audience?
So it goes back to just the typical and natural evolution of the family, which is the family growth, okay? You think about matriarch, patriarch, they have children, those children get married and have children. And at the end of the day, you have really three generations, and it goes from two family members, and it could go to 30 to 40 family members in frankly, within the course of 50 to 60 years. And so again, they spread out. They don't often stay within the same city. And so how do you get them to communicate with each other, to forge connections? I've seen it where they're saying, hey, we're going to have a vacation every year, first 2 weeks of June. And so that way each family unit can say, all right, first 2 weeks of June, we're going to go here. We're going to rent a place, or sometimes they buy what I'll call a family compound. It's large enough to accommodate the broader family. And part of that is having an agenda, but part of that is just hanging out without a purpose and just getting to know each other. And again, the family office can facilitate this, but it's up to the family. The family needs a commitment to come together. The family office isn't replacing the family. It's just enhancing the family to do this and engaging them.
No, I love this, Mark. And to expand on that point of having multiple generations kind of in the same place, interacting with one another, I love that idea of the compound. Is there anything else that is typically done with families, specifically towards education, towards maybe the younger members of the family and bringing them up to speed on finances and fostering that level of financial intelligence?
Yeah. So the family-focused family office, really the executives and other employees, can certainly facilitate this, right? Just how they're facilitating the communication. And so what is valuable from a financial and business standpoint is, one, understanding the family business or family businesses. So oftentimes it can be facilitating the family business leaders in discussions with the broader family. And sometimes it's just quarterly meetings. Sometimes it's an annual shareholders meeting where not only they're disseminating information, but they're discussing it and fielding questions. Okay, so that's on the business end. Second is financial education for the entire family and not for the younger generation. Okay, I've seen it work best when the entire family, all generations, come together, make a commitment to say, hey, we're going to leverage not only the family office executives, not only ourselves, but sometimes they'll even bring in independent third parties, such as somebody like Hannes and Max, as well as other consultants out there to really say, hey, let's focus on what is financial education? What does it mean? How do we invest appropriately? What is our strategy? Why do we have this strategy? Because at the end of the day, a lot of these families are business owning families. They're not hedge fund executives, right, who are financial wizards. They're business owning families who are sophisticated, but yet they can all benefit, especially as a family, to achieving this, which is like building resilience, building competency in the family, and at the end of the day, achieving better outcomes for everyone.
To add to that, it's also important to foster family development and find ways to best utilize each family member's strong suit. So utilizing the five capitals framework Mark discussed earlier can really help the family-focused family office identify strengths, passions, and purpose. Not all members will end up joining the family enterprise, so tailoring strategic plans for each individual can assist in helping him forge a strategic path. For those that do wish to join the family enterprise, a good practice many families institute is establishing a number of requirements they need to fulfill. So this can range from anything from working for a number of years outside the family business, a minimum level of education, like an undergraduate or graduate degree.
No, guys, this is great. Appreciate all that good info, Mark and Max there. But guys, what are some things that families can be doing to promote family values? I mean, we have a lot of conversations surrounding values on this show. It's really at the crux of everything that we do. So talk to me, what are some of these things they can do to be promoting the family values along the way as well?
Yeah. So if you think about a family culture, right, a big component of a culture, any culture, whether society's culture, a corporation or organization's culture, is their values. And so how do you help a family identify their values, which are already there, and how do you help them as a family office executive, especially through this model, in enhancing and sustaining their values? Okay, so there's some tangible things that you could bring the family together to do. One is the family mission statement. Okay, so you're not going to draft the family mission statement, show it to the family and say, do you agree with this? No. What you need to do is engage the family holistically, whether that's the entire family or it's key stakeholders of the family saying, okay, this is what we agree on is our mission. Let's now take it back to all family members and discuss it to make sure it's relevant, because you can't foist it upon the rest of the family. And so the family office is enhancing this. They're bringing together the family. They're coordinating calendars. Another one is the family mantra or family crest, right? So a family mantra is a short and simple guiding statement that can be used to focus the family's priorities. One family that I had the pleasure of serving had a very simple and, in my opinion, timeless, what I'll call mantra, but I don't know if mantra is the right word. It was family, community, and business in that order. And family is obviously self-explanatory. You support and promote the family individually and collectively. Community is exactly what it is. You're living in a community. Let's make it better. And they did it oftentimes through their business. And so it's very easy. It's timeless. It's whatever community you're living in. And it's whatever business you happen to be advancing or starting or operating in at that time. And so just helping the family sit back, think about these values, sustain these values, and really what I'll call codify them, right? Like a family mission statement. Sometimes it's a family constitution. And a family focus, family office can play a key role in bringing the family together to do these.
All right. So I love all this, guys. And there, it seems like, yes, there are multiple tools that can be utilized to establish a family's purpose, their values, so that they can, you know, take aim really at what matters most. And those, you know, what matters most can be withheld for generations to come. Guys, I want to kind of switch gears to another area within this world, an area of importance that we've spoken about a lot on this show in the past, and that's philanthropy overall. So Hannes, maybe you can add some insight in here, because I know these are conversations you have with clients regularly. And that is, why is philanthropy just so important when it comes to affluent families in general? Hannes would then answer, and then Hannes, he would tee you up, Mark. He would say these opportunities have merit as professional career trajectories in their own. They can serve as great training opportunities. Mark, anything you want to add on this one?
There are ways to honor everyone's individual philanthropic interest while creating an opportunity for the family to bond over shared passions. In addition to supporting charities and causes as a family, there are certain charitable vehicles that can be used for each family member's specific endeavors. Donor advised funds are charitable vehicles in which an individual or an entity can make an irrevocable contribution. The donor surrenders ownership of these assets but retains advisory privileges on investments and grants. Donor advised funds have low minimums, which make them great learning opportunities for family members getting started on the subject. For shared passions of the entire family, many often established a family foundation, which then can serve as a platform for financial education and various learning vectors and exposure into nonprofit engagement. Many families also create professional opportunities for family members within the foundation, either as a paid staff or as a board or committee member. Now, these opportunities have merit as a professional career trajectory in their own right, and can serve as a veritable training opportunity for future overlapping roles within the business or enterprise. Mark, anything more you want to add on this one?
Yeah, sure, Hannes. In addition to what you just mentioned, the benefits to getting involved in the family's philanthropy are several, okay? First of all, you get to know the charitable organizations that you're doing work with, right? You get to know them. You get to understand how those organizations operate. You get to understand their constraints. And it's really where the rubber meets the road in not just giving money, but also understanding them and helping them, you know, overcome their issues, their constraints, and their problems to really fix something in society. Okay. The other component is engaging and creating and updating the foundation mission statement. So these are really like tangible things that you're helping the family facilitate, learning how to conduct due diligence on researching organizations. How are they carrying out their mission? Are they doing it effectively? Because again, you just don't want to give dollars. You want to really understand it, because those dollars can go somewhere else, right? There's an opportunity cost to that. And so how do you have the desired impact grant making, determining what success looks like? I'll even take it one step further and I'll circle back around. I've seen some family offices, because you have a lot of family members, right? The more family members you have, the more individual initiatives that they have, right? So I've seen some family members go and launch active charitable operations themselves, whether it's creating literacy programs in the inner city, or frankly launching a school, I've seen these family offices initially act as the back office to a lot of these initiatives, to where they're really the back office, like accounting function, legal function, helping the family think through all this stuff, even securing insurance. And so that's really families operating and not just giving dollars, but a lot of times those dollars are coming from the family foundation. So it's leveraging the family office for administrative functions initially. And then you get into other value-added components of philanthropy, right, as a family. So you think about a foundation, it's really an organization. It has a board. It has required record keeping. You have to have minimum distributions per year. There's obviously a focus of the family through that private foundation. And so it's just another vehicle of how the family sustains and promotes its culture and builds upon it, as well as showing and demonstrating in real time their values. So you've got boards and committees where, again, the family's coming together. They're discussing this. They're talking about, does this align with our values or not? We're going to promote and support XYZ organization, right? And here's where we're going to allocate to it per year. And then there's the investment portfolio. So you could leverage the private foundation's investment portfolio for really, again, just another vehicle for driving financial and investment literacy. And then there's, you know, there's the nuts and bolts, which is the tax filings, the compliance. And so it's just another great way for families to engage with each other. And it's part of, again, what we call the family enterprise. And the family focus, family office can help promote these endeavors, sustain them, and help the family really compound their culture over generations.
No, this is great stuff, Mark, and I appreciate all the insight into this. You know, we've covered a lot today, just this idea of how that family office functions as a whole, and then, of course, you know, really how it's allocated towards achieving the family values in both, you know, the short-term goals and, of course, the long-term goals as well. You know, for anybody out there in today's audience that has taken something away from this conversation, and maybe they recognize the benefits in opening up a dialogue, Hannes, let's say with you and your team, to just talk about how this model would maybe work for them themselves, what would be the best way they could reach out to you and your team, Hannes, to just, like I said, open up a dialogue, start a conversation?
Sure. And if you're interested in learning more about this family-focused family office or get in touch with Mark Tepsik, you can call us directly at 212-713-8952 or just email us at hannes.grosher@ubs.com and we'll have a conversation.
Well, fantastic, Hannes. Appreciate that. And hey, look, guys, look, I know you're busy guys. You got a lot of clients to serve. We'll let you get back to doing that. But really appreciate you carving some time out of your day to jump on board and talk through this family-focused family office. Really an interesting twist on the family office model that we've been talking about a lot on this show. So appreciate you guys and looking forward to being back on another one with you.
Thank you. Much appreciate it, everyone.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Great to be on the show again, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having us, Ryan.
All righty. And hey, look, folks, we want to take one final moment and say thank you for joining us here on the show today. If you did take anything away from today's discussion, you did benefit from it in any way, shape, or form, make sure you hit that subscribe button then on whichever platform you checked us out on. That way you never miss out on another wealth management related conversation that we have on this show, where we dive into these financial topics. We bring experts in to discuss their unique field and hopefully provide value to you and yours. But for Hannes and Max, as well as Mark, I'm Ryan. We're going to go ahead and say so long today, but we appreciate you stopping by and being with us on Through the Wealth Lens. This communication is intended to be used for educational purposes only and does not constitute a solicitation to purchase any security, insurance, or advisory service. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. An investment in any security involves significant risks, and any investment may lose value. Refer to all risk disclosures related to each security product carefully before investing. This commentary is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed may not be officially those of UBS Financial Services Incorporated, and the firm does not verify nor guarantee the accuracy or completeness of the information presented. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that clients understand the ways in which we conduct business, that they carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to them about the products and services we offer. For more information, please review the PDF document at ubs.com/relationship summary.